It's Thursday, November 6th, 2014, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 87. Wake up! Runtime for this episode is an hour and 4 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast that failed to have a Halloween episode. My name is Jeremy.
Da-da-da-da! You got the obligatory Zelda joke. I'm Tyler.
Why are you leaving when we're starting the podcast, Zach? That's the opposite of good attendance.
No, see, what was happening is I thought I was going to have a massive belch, and I didn't want to interrupt when you're speaking.
And that's Zach, everyone.
Okay. I'm polite. I didn't belch on Mike.
You're the one who's not drinking beer, though.
What will this be?
This episode is more
carbonated.
Carbonated. It makes you burp more.
This is going to be, what, episode 87? Hey, by the way, it's a prime number, so that's cool.
I think
cool.
It's 88. I might be wrong.
And, like they said, my name is Zach.
I'm introducing a new segment when we get to 100, so look forward to that.
I'm exciting. Is it a look at last...
No,
is it
not.
Last time on last time?
Sort of.
Oh, well, okay. I'm sorry I called that then.
Not exactly.
Okay.
You'll see. All will be revealed.
And you're not really that exciting, Tyler.
I am. I don't know about you guys, but...
Well, I'm awesome, so I can't also be exciting or else the universe would just explode.
Exciting action!
I feel like being awesome constitutes exciting.
You don't understand how it works, then?
Apparently not, so.
Awesome is just having a cool name. That's why the trope is awesome McCool name. You know, I considered doing a video series explaining various TV tropes and giving examples and such.
But that's
I think
what
it's
TV
too
tropes
much
is.
But you have to video everything and you can get ad revenue on videos.
That is true.
That's the way the internet's going. No one reads anymore.
But if you, clip a bunch of, actual clips together, that'd actually be...
Yeah, that's the idea, and then talk over them.
I would super watch that, actually, so...
What have you been playing lately? Let's turn things around on you.
Not League of Legends, because I'm a sad sack who doesn't play League of Legends. I haven't even been watching League of Legends. The World Championship finished, I didn't watch it. I'm still halfway through the second semifinal match.
I didn't bother to watch the semis.
They're probably going to be way more interesting than the finals. We'll see.
I watched the finals, though.
Were they interesting?
Or did White dominate?
Yes and no.
White lost at least one game. I know that.
It did go to four.
They also lost a game against TSM, though.
You know, even the best have their bad days.
Even the best sometimes pick troll champions and stupidly invade when they can see that's a bad idea and fight anyway and lose in the beginning of the game.
They didn't do that in the finals, but it did look like they were picking some champions that they wanted to pick rather than intelligent picks. Like, they picked Twitch against Braum.
Eh. That's a comfort pick, so that's not like picking Singed.
Yeah, he picked Singed.
Okay. Well, yeah, Looper has won games at the World Championship on Singed.
He did not win that one.
Okay.
Who is Singed?
He's not a very good chop lane champion.
I've never heard of this.
That's because he's not very good.
He throws people behind him and then shoots glue on the ground so they can't run, and poison trails behind him.
He is the original do not chase. There's like a cheese
enemy. He's just a super, super tank who poison follows behind him, so... People are dumb and they chase him into poison and he runs away and doesn't take damage.
So most experienced players would just avoid chasing him.
Ignore him.
Yeah, just ignore him and he doesn't do anything.
Yeah. I can see how that's a problem.
Anyway. Yeah, so I haven't been watching that. I backed the Feng Shui 2 Kickstarter, which sadly is over now, or I would tell people to back. Feng Shui is an action movie role-playing game. It came out in 1996, so it's pretty antiquated, but is considered to be a precursor to lots of modern games like Fate. In particular, it's the first game to have separate rules for killing mooks than named characters.
Given that it's based off of action movies, I can see why.
So anyway, it made 30 times its Kickstarter goal. Its Kickstarter goal with $8,000, which it made in 15 minutes. So
that's impressive.
Lots and lots of stretch goals. So for $10, I already have the manuscript of the game, which I've read. That's, going to be edited. It has some obvious mistakes, but it is playable.
Are there things like editor, put something in
yeah,
here?
Yeah, there's lots of editor, make sure this page is right. Editor, put this in the back in the reference table. Make sure this is true. Hey, make sure all these abilities that we gave the character classes here match the abilities later in the book. Some of them don't. Stuff like that. But for $10, I got that. I get the PDF of the final product when it's out. I get a PDF with about 20 scenarios because it met that many stretch goals and a whole bunch of extra setting content.
So you don't get, there's no hardback for it.
There is, but you had to pay, I think, $60 for that. This is all for $10, everything I've said so far. I mean,
By the way, that's still a lot of
Savage
stuff.
Worlds is not done yet, because the a second book that is all like fight scene locations and fight scene ideas. And then a fifth book that they kept adding stuff to. It is an ebook that's just a, I think it's at 20 at the end. I can't remember how many movies and essays on how to work them as game campaigns, how to adapt them, how he would have run those fight scenes. Most of them, however, are Hong Kong movies I haven't seen because it's sort of based on Hong Kong action. So I've been watching a lot of Hong Kong films that are going to have essays on the book.
Oh, since is I'm getting that it for why free. You've been watching them?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a steal for $10, and I'm sad that you can't get it anymore. Very good deal. I'm mostly sad that it didn't meet the stretch goal I really wanted to see, but I don't want to say what that is because Feng Shui is a game that when I run a campaign for it, if I ever do, it's got a really cool setting. And I sort of wanted to do this with Deadlands, but decided it was a bad idea. But I think I want to try it with this game. I don't want to tell the players most of the setting, and I want to be able to reveal it to them.
Is it True Grit?
You didn't tell us most of the setting in Deadlands. I think Tyler just went out and found it all.
I told you there are people who are sorcerers. And
well, it's because Tyler wanted to play one.
Yeah, but that's fine. Whereas with this game, I think I'm willing to withhold character creation options to reveal that those are things in the setting.
Hell, I told you at one point or another that next campaign...
No bards? Can...
No bards! No bards! If I'm running another game, no bards are ever in my game.
There are no bards in my current game.
But not like next campaign Jeremy runs. Just hand me an envelope and that says, this is your character, play it.
That would actually be pretty neat if the GM just like came up with
I've
characters.
I've tried it before. When I did it with the wrong group.
So I think I was the only one that actually got one and I played it, I think, well.
The part of the problem is you have to expect your players to be into role-playing enough to actually play the characters you give them.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's hard sometimes. I feel like even our group isn't the best at
that. Well, I know where my ruts are, and I need to get out of them. And the last time, when he did that the one time, I got a character that was very far outside of my ruts because he was a manipulative bastard.
Yeah, he was the evil mayor.
That sounds awesome. I want to see Zach play the evil mayor.
That's what I thought.
Well, that was exactly what happened. I was... Like, we played two sessions. It was a Buffy game.
I think we played, like, six.
Well, we played a couple of sessions.
We did not go far.
After, like, at one point, Cody got an objective. I had more resources in this thing that we were all involved in. I got his objective.
Yeah, I had him against another player. I had an auction. He was the rich mayor. So Cody wanted something from the auction. And he bought it to use his leverage with Cody. It was pretty great.
I'd love to try that again. That kind of, well, not necessarily that game, but that kind of idea.
Yeah. Anyway, I was going to say something, but anyway, so yeah, I've been watching lots of Hong Kong action flicks for that reason, with varying degrees of enjoyment. Like, I started with Big Trouble in Little China, which is actually an American movie, but it's a send-up of those, because I've been watching John Carpenter movies for Halloween, and he directed that, and it's okay. I see why people like it, but Kurt Russell is really good in it. Basically, he plays the American hero who thinks he's like, because he's the American, he's going to come in and solve the problems without realizing he's the only American. So actually, he's the racial minority sidekick. And he's really good at it. But like the characters are really bland around him and the plot is sort of meandering.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, but it has good elements.
So do you watch Obscura Zalupa?
No.
That's her thing is B-movies, but yeah. A large number of them are this film studio that owned both an American and a Hong Kong film studio. So they'd film movies in Hong Kong and then like splice in American portions of the movie and then use the footage from the previous Hong Kong movies.
Interesting.
That's she's got a number.
So like Power Rangers sort of, but
kind of like Power Rangers, yeah.
Huh.
Weird.
But there's actually apparently she likes a large number. I mean, likes. In the manner that she likes B-movies. But she likes a large number of the Hong Kong films that were adapted to American films. So.
Yeah. Well, so the second one I watched was The Killer, which I didn't know is one of six movies with a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
And it is, like, if I had known that, I might not have liked it as much.
Is that good or bad?
It's good. It is a really good film. Like, to the point where I'm like, how is there not an American remake of this because Americans are xenophobic? Oh, there were three tries and they could never get it right. Okay.
So, moral of the story is I should watch that movie at some point.
You should. Alex would hate it, but you would like it. Then I watched Savior of the Soul, which you can't watch, so don't worry about trying to find it. It's been out of print for 10 years. I could not pirate it.
Wow.
Not streaming anywhere. I eventually did find some methods by which I could watch it. But I'm really curious to see what his essay is about, because that is a bad movie. And it's never boring. It's got some really interesting ideas, but nothing connects.
No wonder it's out of print.
The setting, like, it's a fantasy in the future, or maybe modern times. Like, the first scene is actually really good. It's this guy assaulting a prison with a sword, wearing a bulletproof jacket so machine guns don't hurt him. And then it just goes in all these weird directions.
Sanya?
Kind of. Like, it feels like it's an anime. Like, it's an anime setting that they never explain to you. And then the characters aren't very deep. It doesn't have a very satisfying ending. And it meanders.
And suffers from a lot of plot problems.
Yeah.
Despite the awesome setting.
Yeah. And then Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which everyone knows is a good movie, and is a good movie.
Yeah, say, I watched that when I was like...
I watched it when I was 11, and I appreciated it much more.
I didn't like it when I was a kid.
Recently, or...
Yeah, now.
Okay, I was watching
it yesterday,
I feel
actually.
Like I watched it when I was like 12 or something, and I don't think I got how good that movie was, and I've never rewatched it.
And
so.
It's... I don't want to say it's overrated, because it's very good, but it's...
Did you ever see Hero?
No, that's on the list.
Okay.
That one's not bad.
So the thing, I love kung fu movies, and I don't watch any of them.
Yeah, well,
so.
This is also an excuse to watch them. Also, one more I forgot. Once Upon a Time in China, which is Jet Li's sort of comeback after his career started to slip. He plays a historical figure who's a sifu in colonized China. And it was a little, it needed, I think, 20 minutes cut, but it was, the climax is a really good fight scene. And a Jackie Chan movie that wasn't on the list, but Netflix was like, hey, you're watching all these, watch this. I was like, okay.
Yay, Jackie Chan.
You know, it's October. I should probably go through and do another pseudo run at some bad horror movies.
You mean like Sharknado bad,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, like creature.
Because that's what you enjoy.
Like creature movies, yeah.
So anyway, now I know why people thought Jo Yun-Fat was terribly wasted in Dragon Ball Evolution. I'm probably saying his name wrong. Because he was Master Roshi in that, but he is the star of both The Killer and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
And he's
two
great.
Of my like now new favorite movies. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is why that was a travesty. Because his Master Roshi should be amazing.
But unfortunately, it was Dragon Ball Evolution.
So that's what I've been doing, reading RPG books and watching Hong Kong films. Tyler, what have you been doing? Slash playing, because that's what this podcast is for.
Okay, so the first... Well, actually, I'll probably transition into that later. So I got a game on Steam recently. I just like randomly opened up Steam. I was going to go play Payday. I'm like, hey, Midweek Madness. Hey, Abyssal Odyssey. That sounds like a cool game. Procedurally generated 2D fighter? That sounds awesome.
Huh. Like Double Dragon fighter or like Street Fighter fighter?
More like Double Dragon. I thought it was going to be more like Street Fighter.
I saw that one and was like, that sounds terrible.
I call on Alex. Is it just Abyss Odyssey? Not Abyssal Odyssey? Apparently it's just Abyss Odyssey. And it makes sense because you actually explore something called the Abyss. And I would claim that it's probably an Odyssey.
Is Athena there?
No, but there are other gods. So, there is a Pincoya. So, it's based really heavily in, like, Western European folklore, specifically Spanish and French, which is weird because it's not something I'm particularly familiar with. So, there's a lot of this, like, almost familiar, like, vaguely Germanic folklore, but it's not something that's really common in America.
Huh.
So, it's a game that allows you to take control of one of three characters, all of whom you have the really fast chick who can do a lot of like crazy combos into each other, the really slow heavy hitter guy who has a lot of like kind of judo style throws, or the Pincoya, which is an unlockable character if you've dumped enough of your expendable money into a fountain, who has really good range and jump height but is slower than the other two. And you basically wander through like a kind of Mega Man style platforming area while kind of doing 2D fighter slash brawler style moves against a bunch of mooks. The catch is, after you've killed enough mooks, you like accrue mana over the course of this that isn't tied to your use of special moves that you can use to do an ultimate, and your ultimate traps the soul of one of your opponents, and you can actually transform into any of the mooks that you fight.
Oh, that's cool.
So when you're a high enough level, you can actually trap the souls of the bosses and become the bosses for a while, and when the boss dies, as you're as the boss, or when you become the boss and you run out of health, it should just revert back to your normal state.
So sort of like Nocturne, when you get mad at Yor on your team and are like, ah, why does he suck now?
Except he's actually exactly as you captured him. Oh. In this one, so.
Well, I mean, but aren't the enemies tougher, so he sucks by comparison, or no?
If you can capture a boss, he's as hard as he was when you fought the boss. It just depends on your skill.
Okay.
So, it's actually really cool. That said, I don't know, it supports like online, it supports up to 4-player split screen or 2-player online, and I'm...
That sounds kind of backwards.
What, more player split screen?
Yeah.
Well, it's actually not split screen, it'll share a screen. The problem is, it's a... not got many servers backing it, so it can't really do online. But, I don't know, it's an interesting game. I was like, man, this sounds like it's right up my alley. And then I went and played it, and I'm like, oh, it's published by Atlas, of course.
Atlus makes some pretty decent games.
Alex commented that it really reminded her of Odin Sphere in terms of how everything moves. And
now that you say that, I'm imagining a slightly different game that sounds very good.
It's animated very similarly. I really like it. It is not what it was described as. It's more a brawler than it is a 2D fighter. But it's fun, and it allows you to like cancel moves into each other.
Uh-huh.
I poured about 10 hours into it. I'm getting close to the end of it. I think I've almost maxed out all three characters, so. I don't know. It's fun. It was also only, I think, $5 for the two copies I bought.
Oh, that's a steal.
Yeah, so. You gotta love the midweek madness. The other game I've played some of, although it's been really frustrating because they introduced some bugs into it, is Payday 2. Payday 2. As opposed to the original.
The Payday inning.
Okay, so what happened?
The reason that's important is, so Crime Fest finished recently. October 18th was their end date for getting however many players into their Steam community. They reach all the end goals, so that's cool. The secret goal, did you ever see the Crime Fest page for, like, if we get this many players, we have a secret thing?
I think I remember seeing that.
The secret goal is actually kind of hilarious. It's Keanu Reeves is a playable character.
Really?
That's pretty good.
So there's a movie coming out tomorrow, I think, by the time we're recording this podcast, called John Wick.
Yeah.
Which is about a low-key hitman who goes after the mafia for killing his dog. Played by Beardy Keanu Reeves is a playable character in this game, man. Playing as him, he's like, whoa, I'm the one. It's so good.
Going back to Feng Shui for a minute, instead of classes, you have archetypes, most of which are clearly meant to be a certain actor. There's not a Keanu Reeves one, interestingly.
I thought there was the one.
No.
No, that's just Rogue Legacy.
There's like a Jet Li one, there's a Jackie Chan one, there's a Sylvester Stallone one, there's an Arnold Schwarzenegger
Chuck
one.
Chuck Norris?
Not exactly Chuck Norris. There's a martial artist, and he's more Bruce Lee than anyone else. But
I think while Keanu Reeves plays the same character in every plot, the powers endowed to that character...
That's true. Constantine, he's a little magic. Matrix, he's Matrix-y.
Yeah, I think he plays the same character, but...
Bill and Ted, he has time travel.
So, that's pretty awesome. The one downside is, okay, so they redid the skill trees. You get all your skill points and all the money spent back so that you can go into them again.
Okay.
You don't have tier bonuses anymore. You have perk decks. So you get a conversion rate from experience points to perk points, and you can put those into decks. And then you can just switch the deck out before going into a mission. So if you're doing a loud mission, you can go with your, like, I'm a meat shield deck. And if you're doing a stealth mission, you can go, I'm a really stealthy guy deck, and you basically carry different sets of perks, of which you can have one equipped at a time.
I liked the old way they had it. Now it sounds like they're overcomplicating things.
I liked the old way, but I think I actually like the way the new one works better. The problem is they didn't backport experience for the perk decks. So I'm level 80, I am less powerful in my perk deck than someone who started level 1 and went to level, like, 12. That said, I also have the 80, or actually it's probably closer to 100 other skill points that I can put into the actual skill trees. Also, they're adding another skill tree for Hoxton on the 27th, which is cool.
We need to play that some more.
The one game-breaking bug is I went to go play it just to, you know, test out all the changes they've made, and I did a mission stealthily just so I could get the experience bonus, and I did a 2-skull rats. And they somehow managed to introduce a bug that if one of your NPCs gets tased, and then the taser loses focus for a reason other than you specifically shooting him, your NPC stays tased. So I had Chains and John Wick as my NPCs, and Chains was like my meat shield being tased, even though he wasn't actually tased. He couldn't die, so everything was just like hovering around him, shooting him. And I'm like, okay.
And he was just being tased?
Yeah, except there was no taser. The taser was already dead. He couldn't, but he was stuck in being tased mode for some reason. It didn't affect the player in the same way. I got tased and I killed the taser and it was fine. Anyway, so I'm taking the last bag of meth to the car. I get tased. I manage to get freed by John Wick going, I'm a hitman, yo, and shoot him in the head with a pistol 20 times. He lived somehow, but I ran back inside the house and John Wick gets tased. I'm like, hey, John, get over here. And he's like, I'm being electrocuted, bro. I don't know what to tell you. And so I go out and kill the taser, and I kill, like, the 20 people surrounding Chains and John because they're in the same spot. And I'm like, okay, well, everything's dead now.
So could they still move?
No, they're sitting there being tased constantly. I'm like, okay, whatever. So I go and toss my bag of meth in the car. The assault's ended. I've killed everything because I'm a god.
Humble, too.
Yep. So I walk back upstairs. I'm like, okay. I take my last bag of meth off the shelf. I'm like, well, this ought to be a cakewalk. I turn around the corner, and there's a cloakroom on that patio on the second floor. I'm like, well, that sucks. And my shield's down because I just walked through a bunch of bullets for him because I had some sort of delusion of grandeur that I'm a god. And I have no shield. And the cloaker is like, oh, hey, bro, I hear you like meth. And he, like, walks up to me and he's like, you know, I'm not going to down you in one hit. And he, like, just punches me in the face repeatedly. Instead of, like, actually doing the cloaker down thing, he just goes up to me and goes, whack, whack.
I've had a bad day. I just put away the Joker, and I'm going to take it out on you.
That was pretty way much more Sylvester Stallone, Judge Dredd than Batman.
Anyway, so the cloaker punches me down, and my two NPCs are being tased by nothing. I'm like, well, crap. So, yeah, that was kind of annoying. And I had been in the game for like 40 minutes at that point. I'm like, okay, I'm done with Payday for the night. So, well, since I've been playing Payday 2 recently, and you've not been online, you fiend. Although you have. You were online earlier this week for
reasons.
What was
I playing? Like, I was playing something on Steam, but I can't remember what. Like,
yeah,
I honestly can't. I know,
Jeremy was on Steam playing something?
Yeah, weird.
That's how Tyler saw him?
I was really in a mood for fighting games. I almost stole Skullgirls from you, but
it's a good game.
I think it's installed on my machine.
Galsiv is out, so that's cool. Anyway, since...
Oh, no, I was looking at Gauntlet, because I found out it was multiplayer. And I was like, how much is that? $20? That's seems like a great deal.
That might be a thing we do next Saturday. Anyway, since Payday 2 is a thing, and you also play Payday 2, what have you been playing since you've not been playing Payday 2?
I actually haven't been loading up my Steam. I really should just start doing that when I turn on my computer like I do with a League client.
Just to see if there's money that needs to be spent.
Yeah, well, I seriously debated. I think it was, there was at least a couple weeks ago, or very, very recently, they had the new Tomb Raider on sale for like $5.
Oh,
and
really?
I was like,
I steal.
That's a steal. Don't know if I want to buy it, and I quick close the Steam before
escape,
I spent money.
Run away from spending money on a good game. Eject.
That's amazing impulse control. I would have totally picked that up for $5.
So would I.
Well, I've already played the game. I'm like, I don't know if this is a game that I could legitimately say I want to
how
own.
How much did you pay? Or you pay when you rented it, though?
About the same. Yeah, because I got it out of a Redbox.
Yeah, you beat it in 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It wasn't bad.
No, it's
like,
got
if
very
you
good
guys, if it comes on sale, people out there, this has a Zach recommendation. I wouldn't pay the full $60 for it, but it's easily worth 20.
I actually keep, like, Transistor keeps going on sale, but not enough of a sale for me to pick it up. But
but since I haven't been playing the new Tomb Raider, is there anyone coming out? I feel as though there's a new one.
There is. It's
going to
be Xbox.
Out.
Well, Xbox One and PC exclusive.
The last new Tomb Raider of the Tomb Raider reboot that came out, I've actually been playing a lot of League still. I'm actually sitting on 70 LP League points. So basically, if I can win one game at the rate I have been winning, I'll get into my promotion series. Cast your minds on the wins back to, I think, in May when I said the same thing and then didn't play any more rank.
Still I'll force with, you to this time.
Still
okay.
Playing with like Kevin and Cody and them.
I
and
like then, how Jason is them.
And well,
he's an ant.
He's like the only other person.
He's not level 30.
I exist too, but I haven't been on.
He's not level 30.
Yeah, that's true. He's a second class citizen. Cody's like in ranked now.
Yeah, Cody
he's
is
like
in ranked.
Silver 4.
He's the same rank
what?
I am. I quite honestly.
Wait, okay.
Doesn't
Cody suck?
Yes. Yeah.
How is he in silver?
He got carried his first three games, which are three of his first four games. He got pretty heavily carried.
Also, people in bronze really, really suck. Like, people in bronze are like dumb 14-year-olds who, when they see they're in bronze, jump up and punch their wall until they dent it.
But, like...
That's how bad they are at League.
He's not a bad support when he's not attacking minions. Like, he's decent at supporting. And also, the first, like, three or four games you play really make a big difference in the later games for your placement on that.
Fair enough. I feel like I would have a lot of fun playing support on that, actually. Maybe that's what I should do.
Play with us next time. I'll AD carry. You can support me.
I don't know who the free AD carries or support champions are for new players, but I would recommend Janna right now. She's pretty easy and
I don't think
quite
she's
strong
them,
right now.
But and I've also been playing still a lot of Assassin's Creed 4.
Get any further than Havana?
Yeah, I got it further than Havana. I got my ship.
Yay!
I just finished a mission where I was like, hey, Captain Kidd is apparently one of the assassin peoples. Okay?
Yeah, you've gotten to the point where the plot starts to suck. It's not sucking yet. They're setting things up. They could pay off. They could
but
be interesting.
I went hunting a couple times for, I killed a bull shark.
Ah, nice.
I tried to kill a white whale.
I actually have a good enough whaling, but...
I didn't have a good enough harpoon or a good enough boat to kill the whale, so I gave up, and I'll probably go back and try again later. I really, really like the ship combat.
It's so fun.
I like just roaming around the map on my ship.
Oh, you don't have your, like, base yet, do you?
Yeah, I got the... Okay. I got my base.
So can you capture ships and send them on missions?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was doing that. I think my entire fleet consists of brigs.
I really want to play Assassin's Creed.
Super fun.
It is this game is legitimately awesome.
You have a 360. I can make my brother loan it to you.
I've got a PC, too.
Well, I have a disc.
Oh, physical media?
Yeah, I know. That's the one advantage to them. You can loan them to your friends. Only advantage.
Except in the European Union, where Steam is mandated to
that's
allow
true.
That.
And you...
Well actually,
this
yeah.
is actually through Uplay.
Oh, yeah. Not Steam. You don't have it on Steam?
Well, if you buy it on Steam, it makes you install Uplay.
That's Heroes 6 does the same thing.
I have it through Uplay because that's how I had to download it because of when I got it. But yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
It is a fun game.
The mechanics is good. The plot, near as I can tell, isn't stellar, but I have a ship. That looks like a fun ship to go try and raid.
Yeah, no.
I have a wanted level. I don't care.
Being a pirate is awesome.
I'm a pirate. I'm amazing.
Unless you're playing Uncharted Waters, in which case being a pirate is...
It's still fun.
It's more boring than being a traitor.
Actually,
though.
In Uncharted Waters, being a traitor who's undisturbed, who's going along selling wares is fun.
But
something has been wrong.
Like, one of my only gripes with it right now is that it is actually kind of hard to upgrade your guy. I found it more difficult to find shops that will sell personal upgrades than ship upgrades.
Huh.
Because you can buy ship upgrades on board your ship.
You can buy personal upgrades on the ship,
Not
all of them. I think you go, to the, clothing.
Yeah, I saw that, but it was you can't buy this here.
Huh.
But I think I'm just going to go, next time I play it, I'm just going to go to Havana.
That's
because I know where the weapon seller is there and just buy my gear there.
The idea of upgrades in Assassin's Creed is foreign to me because I played the first two and they didn't have
the ship
that.
Upgrades are really interesting and cool. The personal ones tend to be sort of side grady. One of my problems with the upgrades is my brother pre-ordered it. So we got some DLC stuff that made the upgrades sort of unnecessary until the 2/3 point of the game.
Well, at one point I got my upgrade for an additional holster for
those are great because then you just pull out four guns.
I got the upgrade for that because I was wandering around on not Havana, Nassau, that island.
Yeah.
And I wandered into the swamp.
I've trained so much in Nassau.
By crocodile. And so I killed the crocodiles.
You got jumped by crocodiles.
Yes.
How did they sneak up on you? They're crocodiles.
It was in a swamp.
Okay.
Like, they were swimming in a swamp I was wading through.
Okay.
And so they jumped me, and then I shot them and skinned them. It's like, you can upgrade stuff. Oh, I can upgrade another pistol holster. Cool.
Those are by far the coolest upgrades, because, yeah, you can get up to four, and they're single shot. So you pull, you fire, and you drop.
There is
it's not Millie. Millie's the
yeah, it is
Mel. Character.
Oh no, you're right. It's Meryl. Derringer Meryl.
There is a man of war near one of the
The ship or the jellyfish,
like a man of war battleship.
Okay,
near a point that I took, like a sea fort.
Yeah,
and I'm really debating seeing if I can beat it in a sea fight.
You should probably, if you really want it, you should swim to it stealthily, infiltrate it, and kill the captain. Because you probably can't take it yet.
I have upgrades to my cannons, and I do have mortars.
How many times have you upgraded your health? Your
no.
Yeah, the man of war is going to be like, we have 40 cannons, bro. Later. Also, we have mortars. You're not the exclusive club.
So is that a thing you can do, is basically take command of the ship by stealthily assassinating the captain?
You have to kill some officers, too.
That's actually pretty cool. I feel like that's a good use of the fact that you're an assassin.
Yeah, usually it's more fun to naval combat it, but... That's an option. And you get a feel a little bit by Batman. Like Batman, you climb into the masts and you jump on the captain.
And I've taken a couple of the sea forts.
Yeah, that's the only part of the game I didn't find fun. My brother really liked it.
It isn't bad, but sieging a land-based fort with a ship is not as engaging as...
Fighting another ship.
Full-blown naval fight where it's like, okay, me and you, right here, right now, bring it on. Oh, I thank you, because you're a schooner, not an actual frigate.
It's great when you're, going after merchant fleets, and there's a pirate hunter after you, so you're in this, you versus five other guys fight.
Yeah, I had that happen in, the...
And you're trying not to aggro the French, because it's only the British that are mad at you right now, and you can't take it if they join in.
Well, I'm currently pissed off the Spanish. The British don't care that I'm around ever, but the Spanish, they hate me. Which is good, because I'm trying to make the Spanish
game. None of us have played Shadows of Mordor yet, have we?
Nope. I don't have a console that can run it.
I just haven't paid for it. Besides that, like, because of the of League existing...
You have Assassin's Creed 4 still.
And I'm playing Assassin's Creed 4.
You should 4. At least get tired of that. Maybe not beat it, but get tired of it before you play Shadows of Mordor Shadows Land.
Well, that was kind of what I was going to do. If Shadows of Mordor goes on sale in the Steam Winter Sale, because they do that...
Probably won't. Thing. It's a little too recent, but it might.
If it does, I'll probably Arkham pick did. It up.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But Arkham didn't sell very well.
Ah, good point.
But we'll see. So that's what I've been doing. Probably play a bit more ranked, especially if Kevin stealth ranks me again. We played a game of ranked yesterday that I didn't know we were playing.
How did you not know? Did Kevin just, like, invite you to a match? Or
He just invited me to a game. I thought it was a normal. I wasn't paying that close of attention to whether or not it was ranked. And it just turned out to be a ranked game. We lost, which is why I'm at 70, not 80. But it feels like I get bad teammates more often than I get decent ones.
That's actually something I've noticed about the Payday 2 online community. I played a couple games online with random people, and they are surprisingly not assholes. It's really weird.
No, the thing about it is, a lot of the people on League aren't assholes.
They're just bad?
They're just not good.
Okay, fair enough. That's one thing I've noticed about Payday 2 is that it's got a surprisingly non-toxic online community.
I mean, lots of games do. I feel like you only really hear about super toxic communities, though.
Yeah, League that may be is my notorious for having a really bad community, and there have been a couple of games in which I'm like, okay, you are legitimately...
They've also hired multiple psychologists to try to make their game less friendly to toxic players and more rewarding to people who are nice.
But I mean, you're more likely to find neutral to good players than toxic dicks.
I'm interested about that. What?
Yeah, you haven't Riot has that? A psychology division that they're trying to detoxicify their player base.
Right now, the Tribunal is down for maintenance. It's been down for the last few months. But, like, banning toxic people?
Well, the Tribunal is basically a court of your peers.
Oh.
When like, they have that system. Oh.
So they basically say if enough people voted this player's an asshat, they gather those people into a jury?
No, it's not those people that's...
Well, it's if you report, it goes in, it flags that game. And if you reported in, I think it was 15 to 20% of games that you play in, you are submitted to the Tribunal. And it'll pick five games or games you reported in for judgment. And if the people looked at it and said, he's a little annoying, but he didn't actually break any of these in any of these five games, they'll pardon him. But since it takes so many games being reported, that if you get to the Tribunal, there's a reason it had like a 99% punish rate. Because if you got there, it is very, very low that you were not a toxic dickbag.
How are you chosen for the Tribunal?
You go in, you would click on Tribunal, sign in, and be above level 20.
So basically you have to volunteer for it.
Yeah.
That's actually interesting. I thought it was randomly chosen, but...
And they don't give out any rewards or anything like that for it. So it is just people who want to make the game better.
Hell, I'd probably do that more than playing the actual game, so...
Well, unfortunately, like I said, the Tribunal was generating cases really, really slow, and they took it down. And it hasn't come back yet. It's been down for like the last 6 months.
That's a really neat idea for an online game, though. I don't think that's been done before.
They also have an honor system where you get a cool badge if you get honored enough times.
They're working on fixing that because that's actually broken.
Yeah, too. I know. I've had my badge forever. And
well, the majority of the people that have them are, it's like the top 15% are people on any server, and most of them are played like exclusively co-op versus AI.
Yeah, because you get lots of honor in this. That's where I got my badges. And then they They added the amount of games you reported in to your matchmaking, so it tries to match you with similarly toxic players in theory. That's a minor concern on the matchmaking, but...
Well, they took that
it's
out.
It's in there? Oh, have they?
Like, I don't know if they ever added that, because that's a Prisoner Island thing.
Oh, that's true.
And they said they don't want to do that. One thing that they've come close to now is they have recently implemented a system where if you're chat restricted, which is another system they added, where you just get a limited number of chat per... game.
That feels like it could be potentially bad if you're actually trying to communicate after performing your ways.
After a certain amount, you have to be reported in like 20% of games for being that, and it is reviewed by a Riot employee to make sure. And if you get it, what it basically means is, you're in this game you're trying to communicate and use the chat responsibly, but in this game you're flaming your teammates, constantly using death threats, homophobic slurs, racial epithets. You know, you're misusing it. And obviously, if he was doing that, he'd probably have been instantly permabanned. But you were using it wrong, and so you've lost your privilege to use it.
I mean, that's a cool idea, but...
Also, they turned off the ability to talk to your opponents off by default. You can turn it on, but it's...
Yeah, all chat is disabled by default.
I feel like that's a good idea.
Yes.
It is. I turned mine back on because...
All chat is almost never useful.
I've had decent chats with a few opponents.
That's... But... Like, I have played competitive games where I kind of wish I... There is no chat in that I wish I could have said, hey, that was a good match. I really like the way you use this move, but...
Well, you can always talk in the after-match lobby.
But yeah, it's a really, really interesting setup that they have there, and I'm really looking forward to the next season.
That's a cool idea.
Well, I'm looking forward to the new Summoner's Rift.
Are they redoing it?
Yeah, they redid it graphically.
Yeah,
it's been on the public test server for like 4 months now.
Yeah, it just hasn't been released to live yet, and they're doing a bunch of other things in preparation for the new season.
It pops out a lot more. It's got kind of less color, but one side of the map has a crack through it, so you can always tell what side of the map you're on, and the other side has been more heavily forested.
Well, like, and you remember when we were playing the blue and red buff, we might have mentioned them a couple of times.
You have.
But on either side of those, the red buff side is got more red and stuff just in the natural area, and the blue buff side is more blue.
That's cool.
So you can just tell at a glance where you are. It's a really cool idea. The whole thing looks smoother than the current Summoner's Rift.
This is completely random, although related to red and blue. Did I ever tell you about the heat maps for TF2?
Yeah. League actually has a heat map now, too.
Really?
But, yeah.
In advanced match history, you can see all the heat maps.
That's
they also
cool.
have a heat map for buildings destroyed. It's completely useless because you know where they were destroyed.
Because they're stationary?
Yeah, they never move. But they added that in. Like, they added in build. You can see people's build paths, general match statistics.
Yeah, they made a much more robust match history system.
The only problem is it has to open in a browser. They don't have it in the client.
I can see why, because how many people are actually going to open that over the total percentage of people who play the game?
I do it like every game, but I also want to get a little replay now.
The reason I mentioned the heat maps in TF2 is because after analyzing the heat maps, they actually found that the red teams generally had an advantage because red casts a slightly darker shadow and makes it slightly harder to see, so people died on the blue side more because they stood out slightly better.
Yeah, there is, in League, especially at lower levels, blue tends to have an advantage because the bottom of the screen has the most of the HUD. So blue starts in the bottom, so going up, they have more room to click. At higher levels of experience, that becomes less and less important.
Or if you've ever played a strategy game before.
But especially at low levels, blue side tends to have an advantage.
That slight area of clicking ability.
It's actually a pretty big area.
I feel like you should be able to toss it up onto the top.
A lot of people want that, and for various reasons, they've not done it.
A lot of people also, at lower levels, I feel, don't play with unlocked screens. And with a locked screen,
some
your champion
higher levels
sit
don't play with unlocked
right
screens.
In the middle of the screen. And you can't move the screen away from him.
Huh.
I think that's a bad way to play. But some people have been playing with it for a long time, and for whatever reason have not used an unlocked screen very much. I don't know how you did that, like, at all.
I don't think I ever played with one, based on the couple games I played.
On default, it's on. When I played, it was defaulted on, and I'm like, I can't do this. I need to find out how to unlock this. I need to move my screen. But some people use it, like Double, if one of the top 80 carries in NA, locks his screen in team fights. So he's centered on his guy in team fights. So, like, he can keep track of that.
I can understand why that would be useful, but I feel like that limits your total information.
He's one of the best 80 carries in NA, so it's clearly working for him.
He has to support tell him what's going on, though.
That's true.
Anything else you've been playing, Zach? Because we're pretty deep into here, and I have a lot to say about the assignment. Because the reason I haven't really been playing anything the last 2 weeks is I've been playing a lot of the assignment, which is The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening. Which, as I've said before, it was my first Zelda game, and made me go from this uninformed kid that hated Zelda for no real reason to...
Because you can't jump.
A lifelong fan. Yes, because you can't jump, and that's... It jumps for you in Ocarina of Time? Why do you even bother playing? You couldn't see my big shrug, audience, but it was dramatic.
Well, that's because platformers.
It reminded me of the fact that 3 out of the last Zelda games I've played, I've hated.
Wait, that sentence didn't make much sense to me.
I don't like Zelda.
Okay, that I know, but okay.
This one I didn't like either.
Sorry, I really think it's a good game.
It is more back to the overhead Zelda games.
It feels more like The Legend of Zelda to me than A Link to the Past.
Definitely.
And I think that's just because the map is on a grid. Link to the Past, the game is on a grid.
But he can't tell.
Yeah, but if you look at the map in this game, it's clearly a grid.
Although,
which I think is fine, but...
There's nothing wrong with a grid. Some of the best games people make are on grids.
Say, Link to the Past was also on a grid, like there were clear screen transitions, but...
Well, and this game, all grid chunks are the same size. Some of them have, like, caves and stuff that are off the grid. But and Link to the Past grid sections were variable size.
So
anyway, so this game, you start, you wake up. This is the first Legend of Zelda game that does not have Princess Zelda in it, which is kind of interesting.
That's a little weird. It's a little bit of misnamed then, isn't it?
I think the reason it was called that is because Legend of Zelda marked it better than Legend of Unnamed Character, because yeah. Link didn't have a name yet.
And they've had three games now. That's a franchise.
Yeah. I actually think that
Link's never actually given the... No, I guess he gets named in...
Link to the Past.
Super Smash Bros.
Link to the Past is the first game where he's defaulted to Link as his name.
Yeah, and it's he's named in the instruction book in that game.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought it was Smash Bros. Where he got his name.
Lots of people learned it there, because it just says, enter your name.
Until then.
Yeah. And this game's called Link's Awakening, so...
Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
I mean, I guess if you don't realize the plot, which is not told to you immediately, you might not realize the significance of that. But anyway, I think for a Game Boy game, this game is great.
Oh, yeah. I feel like this is probably, of the Mobile Month games, the most complex, or at least the most
easily the most complex.
You're comparing it to, three platformers and Metroid. It's not going to be that much. Those games aren't complex by virtue of what they are.
I mean, Metroid is arguably a platformer. I mean, they're Mega Man.
So you're comparing what is effectively an RPG to four platformers.
I would say yeah. Metroid is arguably complex. It's got backtracking. It's got multiple paths. It's got
that's called getting lost. It's not being complex.
That's only if you get lost.
You don't have a map. You're lost.
You could make a map.
You could.
You could, like, take out pencil and paper and draw a map. I don't know who would do that, but you
Someone
could.
Someone wanted to beat the game. I mean, I would do that for the first Metroid. I would not do it for Metroid 2.
I mean, it definitely rivals Mega Man in terms of amount of fun I had with one of the games.
No, I think it was both the most fun and the most complex. I mean, what games on the Game Boy are more complex than this? Pokemon, which I mentioned last time, I feel is more complex.
I had a game on the Game Boy when I was a kid that was really complex. I really liked that game, but I went ahead and I lost the thing that had all my Game Boy games in it, and I don't remember what it was called. But
unfortunate.
Yeah, it was kind of annoying.
Can you describe it?
It involved a lot of, like, machines and finding different pieces to interchange to make your particular guy
Robotech?
More powerful. It wasn't Robotech. It was a little-known game, probably like indie. Like, I couldn't tell you what it was.
Lost to the Abyss of Ages.
Which is a shame.
So the controls are a bit simplified from A Link to the Past by necessity, since you only have two buttons, plus a map button and a inventory button. So you no longer auto-block with your shield. This is the first game where you're active and using it.
Which I actually prefer, but
takes up your slot of block, attack, or jump.
That is true, but on the other hand,
I was going to say something about that, and then I realized, you know, why aren't they using these other two buttons? It's like, well, duh, because the 3DS has two more buttons, the Game Boy didn't.
Yeah, that's one of the few problems with this game, is it is sort of lacking buttons. I mean, Ocarina of Time continues to have the shield as an active use item, but it's got a dedicated button.
Yeah, I don't think having the active use itself is a bad thing. It needed more buttons, but that was a Game Boy problem, not a gameplay problem.
That's actually, I wonder if there was actually a technical reason they didn't have more buttons on the Game Boy, or they just didn't think they could support it.
I mean, it came out before the Super Nintendo, and it has as many buttons as the NES.
Touche. That's a good point.
Does it really?
Start, select, AB, four direction buttons.
I thought the NES had three.
No. You can argue that the NES has two controller ports, and thus has twice as many buttons, if you want to be pedantic.
Individual controllers.
One of them had a mic.
That's basically what the...
AB, start, select, up, right, down, left.
Oh, I thought there was a C button, but no, I'm thinking of a Genesis.
Yeah, you're thinking of the Genesis controller.
The Famicom had a microphone, but...
Yes, because the Famicom didn't have controller ports. They had two controllers that came with it, and so the first controller had start, select. The second controller had a microphone.
Man, can you imagine one of those got broken? Would that invalidate your entire system?
I don't know. How would the light gun work?
That's a good question. How did the light gun work with the Famicom? Anyway.
It didn't, in my guess.
Well, they also had the disc add-on in the Japanese version, so there must have been some way to add on
things.
Anyway, though, Zelda. The first puzzle uses the shield. You have to push the spiky thing with the shield.
Yep.
That's a puzzle?
Eh.
Well, puzzles in Zelda aren't really puzzles so much as things that require you to take stock of your inventory. It's kind of like a point-and-click methodology, now that I'm thinking about it, because you have to, like, think about all the tools you have available.
The other Zelda we played, Link to the Past, came before this one, right?
Yes.
Okay, so
this is Zelda 4.
And so now it's a trend where you have to go find your stuff. start with. It's so, not just an individual game. I think Link 2 is the, or Zelda 2 is the only one in which you haven't had to go retrieve your stuff.
You start with the shield in the first one, don't you?
Yeah, well, you start with the shield, but you have to get the sword.
Yeah, but it's in the cave.
You start with the shield and have to get the sword.
Yeah.
In this one, you start with the shield and have to go find the sword.
And Ocarina, you have to get the shield and the sword.
It's really annoying.
it doesn't actually bug me until Twilight Princess.
So when you say your stuff, you mean your essential equipment, not like the add-on items.
Yeah, your essential gear.
I was going to say, in what game do you not have to get more stuff? But if your essential gear, then yeah, that this... I think Zelda is one of these.
Zelda is a unique franchise in which you have to find your gear to begin the game.
I think the idea is it helps make you feel more like a guy who's going on an adventure, because you start out with nothing and then you get a sword. I think that's the idea. Whether or not it works is arguable. Like, I think it takes way too long in Twilight Princess, for example. It takes even longer in Skyward Sword, but I kind of love the first 2 hours of Skyward Sword.
Because it's a high school romance?
Yes, it's like, hey, Sky School Romance anime for 2 hours. I'm like, I wasn't expecting that. Let's go. I have to fight Team Rocket. Hell yeah. But anyway, yes, this game, I mean, it doesn't start the trend. But yeah, at this point, I think it's fair to call it a trend. And it happens in, I guess it doesn't happen in Majora's Mask, but you're trapped as a Deku sprite and you can't use a sword and shield as that.
In this game, you wake up on an island greeted by Marin.
Yes. And her dad, Taren.
That's right. Whose names, I think, might also be Melon and Helen, because Japanese doesn't distinguish between R and L.
I understand that they are different names in both games. I don't know if it's the same difference or if they have different names in the Japanese versions.
Never mind, then. Anyway, she wakes her up, and there's kind of like a vague romance subplot.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, about halfway through the game, she asks you to come to the beach, and she, like, tells you all of her dreams and, like, how much she thinks you're really special and asks if you're paying attention to her and, like, says she'll do anything for you. It, like, as a kid, it was really powerful to me. And given the twist of the game, it makes you care about her, I think. I think this is the first Zelda game with really that has NPCs of note. I mean, Link to the Past does. It has your uncle, but, you know, his job is to give you your sword.
And then immediately die.
Yep.
But he's okay at the end, so maybe not. Zelda's job is sort of to be rescued. She does some exposition. The priest is there, but the NPCs aren't really important. This game, I think, tried to create interesting NPCs. Marin is by far the one who gets the most screen time, but I think they do an okay job with her, especially for, like, a Game Boy story. They also, I think, as part of this, added in a trading sequence where you have to win a crane game to get a Yoshi doll, and then you give that to someone who gives you something, et cetera, eventually leading to the MacGuffin that tells you the secret of the item. Of the item? Secret of the island, rather. And that makes you, like, go to a bunch of NPCs and, like, sort of see how life on the island works. And while I don't think the trading sequence is a great idea because it slows down the game and is sort of just a progress gate, it is interesting, and I do think it fleshes out the setting in a way that relates to the gameplay.
And was clearly propagated to later Zelda games. It's odd to find one that doesn't have a trading sequence. In fact, I don't think any after this don't.
I don't think Skyward Sword does.
It has a trading sequence.
It has, like, the upgrade. I felt like they had the upgrade mechanics that are similar, but work differently. I don't remember one in Twilight Princess, but I feel like it has one.
So, the big twist in this game should... I mean, it's in...
Yeah,
game.
It's...
Okay.
Came out in 93, I want to say. No, Link to the Past came out in 93, so it must have came out after that.
You find out the secret to the island, and I remember as a kid saying, okay, well, I'm done with this because I don't want to, like, end it. The secret to the island is that it's all the dream of, like, kind of a vague god creature called the Windfish, and they're all a non-corporeal entities, and waking the Windfish will end their existence.
So that's why they're fighting you. And this is also the first Zelda game where the bosses talk to you. And I think maybe the only one. And they all, like, taunt you about not knowing and, like, are trying to make you feel guilty about committing genocide on this island by, you know, trying to wake up. It's an interesting twist. And like I said, it makes you care about the characters. You only find this out after you've gone through all the NPCs you need to trade with and found, like, this love plot that's like this long distance romance and helped out these people, helped out this fisherman who's under a bridge for some reason.
When I first played this game, I was really reluctant to finish it because I didn't want to destroy the island. I tried to find other ways to complete the game. But there is no other way to complete the game, so...
Am I the only one who doesn't care?
Maybe.
When it comes to stuff like that?
I have a really hard time being a dick in games.
So do I. I always play Lightside and KOTOR. But I have an objective. I'm going to complete it.
Yeah.
At what cost?
Exactly.
At any cost.
Yeah, well...
Is the objective necessarily more important than the means?
And I was not as extreme as Tyler in that I was not like, I'm not going to finish this. But I did feel bad about it. I was like, man, is this the right thing to do? Well, hopefully it'll be a happy ending.
Turns out,
Well, Marin does say she wants to be a seagull because she's only been on this island because, you know, it's a dream. She can't leave. And as a seagull, she could fly anywhere she wanted. And there is a happy ending where she is, like, made into a seagull by the deity you wake up. So that's a happy-ish ending?
Or it's just all Link's fever dream.
Also possible. But I mean,
eating his fellow sailors on the...
He was in a shipwreck. That's true. Like, you wake up on a piece of driftwood. But you also see the supposed deity.
Although he might just still be hallucinating from being wrecked at sea for a long time. We don't know.
This is also canonically the last time this Link shows up, so maybe he doesn't survive.
Huh. Is it?
Yeah. Well, this is Link to the Past Link. The Oracle's games take place between this and Link to the Past. He does not do anything afterward.
So either he goes home and immediately works on making up an heir and working on other things.
I mean, he's had four adventures. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Or he just dies out in the middle of the ocean and no one ever hears from him ever again. All of his stuff is at the bottom of the ocean.
Isn't Link to Another World?
Yeah, Link Between Worlds is a sequel, but it's years later.
Okay, not the same Link. Yeah. I was going to say one thing. So you naively rejected Zelda games as a child because you can jump. One thing that I really like about this game is that they introduced the Rock's Feather, which is kind of a staple of the Game Boy Zelda games now.
Yeah, it just lets you jump.
Which is a remarkably interesting mechanic in a game that previously had not allowed you to do so.
I mean, it just lets you cross pits. It is a funny-shaped key for the doors that are pits. But it also lets you avoid attacks. And it is kind of, it's not a super interesting mechanic. It's been in games forever. But it adds a little something.
Well, its main problem is that if you want to use it to avoid attacks, you're giving up your shield, which does the avoid attacks generally better.
I thought
that
by
virtue of being a shield.
I always prefer dodging, but that is true. The shield is pretty useful.
Sword and board fighter. Dodge? You mean block.
I actually pretty much in almost any game where I'm given a shield say, I don't need a shield. I can just dodge attacks. That doesn't work super well most of the time, but...
Also, I think because it was a dream and they'd just done Mario 2, added Mario enemies to this, which is kind of interesting. If you jump on them with the Rock's Feather to kill them, they always drop hearts, which is an interesting little nod.
I didn't notice that they always dropped hearts, but that's cool. There were also chain chomps. Those were interesting.
Yeah, there's the second dungeon you have to get to by walking a chain chomp to it, because it'll eat the obstacles in the way.
Because clearly.
Also, you can steal in this game. Because it's also, it removed the potion, so there's not as interesting an element to spending rupees to help you. Instead, they have the shovel and the bow you have to buy, so they're just rupee gates, so that adds something for rupees to do. Because they knew that, like, grinding rupees kind of sucks, they added the ability to steal, so you can just take the items and shoplift them. If you do so, and go back to the shopkeeper reveals he is a practitioner of the dark side and electrocutes you to death. And for the rest of the game, all the NPCs refer to you as Thief.
Instead of whatever you input your name as. Although,
just input your name as Thief, see what happens. Maybe he tries to shock you to death anyway.
I wonder if that's actually the Switch. That would be interesting. I might
probably
have to experiment.
Not.
Probably not. That would be too easy. But although there are some games where if you input your name as Zelda, you can do things.
One last thing I wanted to talk about is, it's interesting to me how many similarities this has with Ocarina of Time. It really feels like the same dev team was doing it, or they were making the game at the same time.
I feel like the interaction between NPCs, maybe, but I'm not really drawing that conclusion.
I'm not either, and I've been playing them. Played them both fairly close together.
This has Taran and Marin, whereas Ocarina has Talon and Malon, who are basically the same characters.
Okay, I would accept that as a nod to this game.
There's also the owl, who only shows up in these two Zelda games, comes and gives you advice and tells you where to go next.
Okay.
I did like that. Got stuck a couple of times, but I did like the fact that the owl told me where I had to go.
I want to talk about that now. I feel like this game, with the exception of the second dungeon, which is terrible, has really good, not pathing, but signposting. You can go call the old man in certain shops, and he'll basically tell you what you need to do. His hints aren't always perfect, but...
Took me like an hour to get through that first forest.
Okay, yeah, the forest... How do you do the forest? Because I remember...
You find the mushroom.
Yeah, you find the mushroom, you take it to the witch, you throw the powder at the raccoon. Yeah.
The thing is, the entering where the witch is changes the ambient area.
Yeah, because it's not in the forest. Next to the forest.
I thought that was going in the wrong place. And eventually I just basically said, screw it, I'm not going anywhere. and decided to wander off, and I found her by accident.
Well, I feel like that's a strength of the game, though. It never gives you such a big area that just by wandering, you're not going to find where you need to go.
But there's nothing interesting in it.
I disagree.
To wander off.
I find the world to be pretty interesting. It's got the forest, and, you know, it's just got monsters in it. But if I keep going to the same place and can't find anything, I'll go somewhere else and I'll go find a witch house.
The world itself did not interest me.
I found it not nearly as compelling as later entrances to the series, but really I actually only cared about Marin. So.
I mean, she is by far the most interesting thing. They've given her a character, they've given her hopes and dreams, and they've given her a crush on you. That never hurts.
That's true. I think that's why everyone would like Malin in the first game, so.
I don't think Malin's in the first game.
Yeah,
not
sorry.
Enough time.
In the first game I ever played, which means it's the first game canonically, so.
Malin is depressing. She loses her family farm, and Ingo is in charge, and she's like, oh, like, embittered old woman. Spoilers. Anyway, I still quite like this game. It did not quite hold up, but for a Game Boy entry to the game, this doesn't feel like a lesser version of Zelda, even though it's not, I think, as good as Link to the Past. It feels like a Zelda game that admittedly has fewer inputs, and that kind of sucks, because just a extra button for the shield would have been good. An extra button for the Pegasus boots when you get them would have been good. But it, like I said, it feels like a solid entry.
I feel like
it does not feel like Zelda Lite.
It's definitely better than the first one, I feel, but...
The first one wasn't very good, despite it being a beloved classic by many.
Yeah, that I never understood. I can't help but comparing, because it uses basically the same engine to the Oracle games, and just seeing all the things they did better in those...
They do come 5 years later.
I know, and that's
and interestingly, are by another studio.
I've never played either of the Oracle games.
Actually, yes, you have. That's why my guide was at your house.
No,
for
I think
so
my
long.
Brother was playing those.
Like,
I don't remember ever
I
actually
feel like
playing
you played
them. I might have just not gotten very far. Big shock, I know, to everybody listening. But having been playing Ocarina fairly close to this game just does not stack up super well against the 3Ds.
Ocarina is such a leap and bound from this. Ocarina is, I think, probably the biggest jump a series has ever had. Even like Super Mario World to Super Mario 64 is not as incredible.
That's actually interesting.
Yeah, well, I was just
write an essay on that now.
I was just thinking about also risks Zelda games have taken and how a lot of them are actually sort of risky propositions. I mean, I think recent ones have not really been, and that's why people are maybe not reacting to them. Because Zelda 2, complete change to everything from Zelda, really didn't pay off, but you can't say they didn't take any risks. Link to the Past really didn't. It was more of a back to basics, let's expand this formula. But they've only had two games at that point, so it's a bit of one. This one, they're putting the game on the Game Boy, a machine that may not be able to power it. And this is not—that's not a huge risk. Which, as I said, maybe this is the lightest one.
It was on
color
something. Too. Like they made it a color port too.
They did a black and white version first,
oh, okay.
And then when the Game Boy Color came out, this was a launch title in color.
The available one that's on the 3DS is in color. That's what everybody's asking.
The cartridge I own on the Game Boy is actually only black and white.
Yeah, they added a few things.
You mentioned they added a dungeon.
Yeah,
which I don't think we've gotten. I don't think any of us got to.
It's an optional dungeon. It just, if you complete it, you get to choose either a red tunic or a blue tunic. The red one doubles the power of all your attacks. The blue one halves all the damage you take. Oh, we didn't talk about the acorn and the power thing, which are interesting departures. That's like the only game they're in, and they're kind of interesting as just having a power up.
Dealing a ton extra damage or taking half damage?
Yeah, especially since it's half rounded down, so enemies that do half a heart do nothing. And the extra power sends enemies flying away and
backwards.
Exploding, which is cool.
Yeah, but... The rest of combat's not that interesting.
What was I saying before that? Color
talking
dungeon.
About risks.
Yeah, yeah. The color dungeon.
And they also, the original version had a dungeon that you could get into an unbeatable state, and they fixed that.
That's not good for a game to have.
No, it's not.
Nope. But Ocarina was a huge departure from the original formula, and I feel like Majora's Mask, in terms of massive tonal shift.
Tone shift, and then also the way the save mechanics work, big risk.
Basically, no one liked the save mechanics.
How the all the masks functioned.
Well, that's a new gameplay. I don't know if that's a risk. That's just new ideas.
Well, since it's coming so shortly off the heels of Ocarina, that's a pretty big shift from Ocarina.
Well, I mean,
so,
it's better than, like, the Call of Duty games where...
Call of Duty 4 was the best one, and now they're all just... Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter, a.k.a. Call of Duty Titanfall.
It's definitely more than that, but I feel like they're like, oh, we can't just make the same game again. Let's try to add something. And then Wind Waker, total graphic shift.
And not... Like, very few people originally responded well to Majora's Mask, and very few people originally responded well to Wind Waker. Now they're remembered as some of the best entries in the series.
The Oracle series, they gave it to Capcom, another company, to develop the game. Bit of a risk.
Now that you're mentioning it, I hadn't thought about that for Zelda games. They do a lot with Zelda games.
And arguably the last two big console ones, Twilight Princess and Skyward Sword, were the lowest risk. But Skyward Sword had the one-for-one combat, which is something.
Although some people had more issues with that than others.
Yeah, well, but it was definitely a risk. I thought it was fine. A lot of people said it was game-breaking, and I can see why they say that.
I thought it was fine. I really like Skyward Sword, but...
So did I. Anyway, that's just something I sort of realized playing this game is it's odd in how little risk it takes. A lot of the mobile games are actually like that. I don't know that Minish Cap takes much, but I also haven't played Minish Cap, so can't really talk to that.
Phantom Hourglass was a huge departure because you do everything by the stylus.
Yeah.
Lets you lead your character around and attack by tapping the screen, which is...
That sounds really bad and really annoying.
It's my brother's favorite Zelda game, but I haven't played it.
It works really well, although I heard Spirit Tracks is also really good, and I haven't played that.
I feel like that's the one that people are most mad about. Like, Zelda Trains, I guess.
Oh, is that where the Zelda Hero of the Trains came from?
Yes.
Who is the worst Link, as proven by Game Theory?
I mean, he's on trains.
I mean, he's better than CDI Link, who can't wait to bomb some Dodongos, but...
But he's also Wind Waker Link. He's the same character.
No, Hero of the Trains is a descendant of his.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Okay, never mind.
Phantom Hourglass is the same as Wind Waker Link, but...
I thought Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks were the same guy.
Same world, not different guys.
Okay. Same alternate timeline.
Strange. Link must have some really powerful genes, since all of his descendants look exactly like him.
I was going to say, and blonde hair is a recessive gene, so...
Clearly not in this world.
Like, Zelda and Link are the only blondes, though.
That implies interesting things about their ancestry, doesn't it?
I feel like not many Zeldas and Links get together, though. Definitely some of them do. But, like, Twilight Princess, Zelda and Link, like... Say, wave each, they're like co-workers, but they were like co-workers for like 3 days who
and
weren't
also,
really working on the same project.
Twilight, like, I know you exist.
Twilight Princess Zelda is also not blonde, so.
That's true, I forgot about that.
I didn't know that.
You never played Twilight Princess.
Actually, I did.
Oh, you did?
Briefly.
What?
I don't think he got far enough to get to Zelda even.
No, because Resident Evil 4 happened and my Wii crapped out.
Oh, man. I've actually been thinking, I got so far in that game, I never actually finished it.
You never
it.
Finished Twilight Princess?
No.
Resident 4.
Yeah,
okay.
Resident 4.
I'm in sort of the same boat. The ending is good, but, like, you've dropped ogres into lava pits, and you fought Vagina Napoleon with the rocket launcher, right?
Yes, I did.
Okay, you're far enough. You've seen everything you really need to.
I just, Vagina Napoleon with a rocket launcher.
That's a fun game of Clue. And with that, I realized that we're not going to do better than that. And so I realized that I didn't ask anyone to pick a game for next week.
Oh, wow. It's that time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jeremy's no longer got the controls.
My idea had been Dreams into Nights.
Nights into Dreams. Wrong title, yeah. Game by Sonic Team. It was a Dreamcast title? Dreamcast title. It is on the Xbox, and is it on Steam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Nights into Dreams.
Yeah. It's nights like the word.
Like nicht?
No.
No.
Like it's night.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Plural into dream. All or right. into dreams.
Into dreams.
Night's game would bring it up on Google. Well, actually, you might just play it on Steam. You have a nice computer.
It is a 3D platformer vaguely in the vein of Banjo-Kazooie, except not really as focused on collecting things. So I've heard only good things about it.
It has cool flying mechanics, but... I played it for like 5 minutes at a not really my friend's house once.
That is an interesting description.
Yeah.
Next time on Last Time, Nights into Dreams?
All right.
I hope that's right. It's not Nights into Dream or something. You know what I mean, guys.
You'll find it.
Same Sonic Team time. Same Sonic Team channel. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2014.
All the video games and other media mentioned herein are copyright of their respective owners.
Unfortunately, I don't own Square Enix. You can contact us at LTOVG at lasttimeonvideogames.com, or Tyler at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, at lasttimeonvideogames.com,
and the best one, Zach at lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Our primary source of interaction is lasttimeonvideogames.com, where you can find all sorts of written material in addition to the podcast.
If you want to follow us on Google Plus, plus.google.com/plus, last time on video games.
If you're one of those weird people who uses Twitter, we are at LTOVG.
Quick, press X. Too late. You failed. The podcast is over.
So I'm like, okay, that's fine. And I was transporting my fifth bag of meth to the car. Man, that is... Anyway, so I was taking my last bag of meth to the car. And anyway, so I'm taking the last bag of meth to the car.